from Santa Barbara, California. The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic healthcare, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. Meryl Squire, she is an author. The title of the book is The Walk. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Bruce. It's nice to be here.
You are actually out of Chicago.
Yes.
All right. You have done some very interesting things in your life before writing the book, The Walk, which we're going to talk about. And incidentally, for those of you who are listening, The Walk is a real story, autobiographical account. But tell us a little bit about your background. You were at one time a fashion model.
I was a model many years ago, or it seems like a lifetime ago. And I worked very hard at a business that I eventually gave away, led up to some...
Gave away.
And I'm happy today that I did, very much so.
All right. I think there are people who, if anyone has ever had a business... There are good reasons for giving businesses away. You, of course, are... You're also the mother of three children?
Yes.
Three girls.
Three daughters, yes.
Right. And, of course, you had an interesting situation that occurred in your life that probably turned your life around.
Absolutely. It's... there are definitely two different lives here. I had been living... I believe that I had not been living up to my values. And as a professional speaker today, I ask people... if they remember as children whether or not they had values and what kind of character traits they wanted to have or what they wanted to embody as they grew up. And everybody raises their hands. They say, yes, oh yeah, I remember that. Did anyone have a hero? And of course they had heroes. Well, I had heroes and I had values. And some things came along in my life that I allowed to change my life. I allowed to change me, and I allowed to direct me in a way that I wasn't very proud of.
Now, that's an important point, too, because, you know, some people don't want to take responsibility, but that is true. We do invite those changes that occur in our lives. Well,
I have a belief that the only time you can ever change your situation is by taking responsibility. You can't change anything until you own up to. And it's not laying blame. Mm-hmm. It's just saying, yes, I can do something about it. So I grew up in Chicago. I grew up on the West Side, and life found me. And it was it turned into what I term hard time USA. And I became, I suppose, hardened, and I decided that I would probably in my subconscious, I decided to get even. Or in some way, I learned the art of manipulating other people. And I wasn't very proud of myself. And in 1979, during a modeling career, I am owning my business and living a very, very tough life. I worked incredible hours. It was a one-person show, and it was very difficult. On December 2nd in 1979, I had a stroke, and it stopped me short. I like to say that the universe came along, hit me upside the jaw, and said, "You're worth more. Do something else with your life." I was paralyzed on the left side and learned what it was like to truly effectively communicate with myself within the world without my body. And it was very interesting.
Now, you obviously have, or, you know, from my perception anyway, rebuilt yourself because you are moving.
I'm moving, yes. And it was a very interesting process. I was always very athletic, but as a child, I'd been very ill, and I'd had a great deal of illness as a child. While I was laying in the hospital with this stroke, I had to remember some of the things that happened to me as a child, and something my mother taught me, and I truly believed, was that you can do anything if you put your mind to it.
Now, what did the doctors basically say about your situation at that point?
Don't get me started.
Well, it
was very interesting. I was only 28 years old. They began running tests left and right to find out why did this person, why is this person here? What is going mm-hmm. on? And anyone who has had a stroke or knows of somebody who has had a stroke knows that it culminates in other problems. And I went into serious gastric distress. I was not digesting, and I had tubes all over me. I was in a teaching hospital, and there would be a group of doctors that would go around and check on all the patients and poke and prod, and I got to be a guinea pig. Well, I could not communicate, and I would just lay there.
So you were unable to speak?
I could not speak, or I could not speak effectively. I mumbled. I had the facial where my face was pulled down in a kind of a grotesque, for a model that's, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, makes her living with her face. That was difficult for me. One time right after the group of doctors left, two interns stayed back, and they were looking at my chart, and one intern had the absolute audacity to say to the other intern, sounds like a joke, doesn't it, to say to the other intern, this broad's in such bad shape, she won't make it to 30.
Hmm. That was that, so did you feel that inspired you?
Oh, the emotion. I was stunned that he would say anything in front of me, and they didn't care.
Right.
But those words absolutely gave me back my life. I know that because it started a fire in me that has not been quenched. I just keep going.
Okay, so now you certainly attribute some of your recovery to whatever different things the hospital, of course, came up with, but
no,
there must
not
be
all.
More. No, but some of it, I mean.
No.
Okay,
no, they
great.
Couldn't, the only thing they
then
could
let's
do,
hear that. Let's hear about
the
it.
The only thing they could do was let me repair.
So how do you think that you repaired yourself then? Because I think you did this on your own.
Yes. Yes, well, I know that.
Okay.
I was absolutely determined to get out of that place. I said, no doctor is ever going to touch me again. I had it with doctors.
Now, how'd you get out of there? Did you just...
Well, I'll get to that. I was appalled at the way I'd been treated, and I knew that I had given up... I had given them the right to abuse me, and I felt very much abused, and I just began saying over and over in my mind, I am well, I'm healthy, I'm well, I'm healthy, and I began picturing myself running. In my head. And I began moving, focusing energy on moving my body. I'm moving my left side particularly, and moving my toes and moving my hands. And gradually I just got better.
Now this sounds very similar. This particular scenario isn't what I'm talking about, but the idea that Edgar Cayce mm-hmm. Once said, and it's quoted. I don't think he said this, but his channeling said, physician, heal thyself.
Exactly. Of course, we're all doctors. We can heal ourselves. We have the ability to do anything we want. It's our lack of recognition that holds us back.
So you started by giving your power over to the hospital.
I took it
and
back.
They couldn't do anything for you. So you took the power back and you said, okay, I'll do this.
Yeah.
I think that's the old story. If you can't get it done right,
do it yourself. Yeah. So 2.5 weeks later, it took me 2.5 weeks, but I swore I would walk out of there. And I did. I dragged myself. But I got myself out of there, and I put myself immediately on a very strict health regimen. I changed my entire eating habits. I changed.
Let's talk.
What I did.
Okay, let's talk real quickly. What kind of eating habits did you have before, and what did you change to? Well, these are things that people need to know.
In my lifestyle, I would drink socially. My social life became prominent, and I found myself drinking more wine than necessary. Not that I was never an alcoholic. I did smoke prior to the stroke. I did not eat well. I mean, white bread. I wasn't conscientious of what I was eating. I put myself on only whole natural foods, whole wheat breads. I put myself on a very strict physical exercise routine. I also put myself on a head clearing routine. I started cleaning up my thoughts, and I found that to be very important.
Now that's an important point because people think of thoughts. Mm-hmm. People think that thoughts are nothing.
Oh no, they're.
But what you are saying is something that we've heard before on Timeless Voyager Radio. These are real, not entities necessarily, but definite manifestations that are at a higher frequency. We can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're real,
mm-hmm.
and you're saying that these thoughts that you had, for example,
this may sound very trite, but I began thinking of myself. What would the kind of person, a clean person, I called it a clean person, be like? I stopped littering. I stopped doing anything that I could not live up to. That I felt I really began living a different, as though I were a different person.
So you were regaining this person that you aspired to as a child, mm-hmm. as you said, that somehow got lost for a little while.
I think so.
And this is what you worked on.
I think so. And in fact, I started having dreams, and this dream was continuous, constant. Every waking moment, every sleeping moment, I had this dream, and it was a progressive dream. And it was a dream in which I was by a creek, and there were rocks all around, and I was laid out on this table being remade by another being, by another human, I guess. And there were animals all around me, and I could communicate without ever speaking a word. And it was, and the dream went on and on and on. And it was so important, but I had this sense of becoming a different person. And it was an interesting dream. During this time, I started working with my children more and put them on the same healthy diet. They resisted a little, as children will. But I recognized that I had not done anything. I'd been an adventurous child. I read all these adventure stories, and I had not done anything. And here they said I wasn't going to live till 30, and I was hurting very badly inside. I had not seen any part of this country or done anything. And so...
So that's when you announced.
I didn't announce it. It was very interesting. That wasn't... The walk was not my plan. What it was I just wanted to go somewhere. I wanted to get away. And so I gave up my business. I gave it away to one of the models that worked for me. We traded. I got her dog. I got the better part of the deal, I think. And I went. And we were sitting on the sofa one night, and I said, I don't want to take a train. It's too fast. I don't want to take a plane. I can't see anything. Even in a car, it was too fast. I couldn't really absorb my surroundings. Then my daughter, Dina, piped up and said, Mom, I know, why don't we take our bikes? And I thought, what a great idea. And then I looked at my 7-year-old and my dog, Sadie, and said, well, that probably won't work. And I was joking, and I said, Dina, I know, we'll walk. And I was joking, but my husband heard me and started making fun of us. He started ridiculing me.
Well, I think we're learning one thing about you.
My strategy.
Don't ever say anything in jest. Mm-hmm. All right, so this is where it starts.
Yes.
Your husband made the wrong comment.
Oh, he said, yeah, right, ha ha, you girls will be walking. And I said, watch me. 14 months later, we walked from Chicago to Yellowstone National Park.
Which, how many miles is that?
1,438 miles.
And the three of you, or four of you?
Four of us, my three little girls.
Excluding your husband.
Excluding my husband, my three little girls and my dog, who's also a girl. Time. And we started out, we carried backpacks, and we it took us 5 months and 148 days. We never stayed inside and never took a ride. So that's basically what the book is about. And we had quite a few adventures along the way.
Now, this is quite an inspiring point here. How long was it from the stroke to this walk?
14 months.
Did you say that? Did I miss that? I'm sorry.
No, I didn't. No, I, okay. I didn't. It took me 14 months later. We began the walk.
So really, this is really amazing to think that 14 months before you were laid up and unable to communicate and headed towards, I guess this is the junction point. You had to decide whether you wanted to live or whether you just wanted to fade away and die. Mm-hmm. And your decision was to live. And this is an important point, isn't it? Because it was your decision.
It was a decision. I don't know that I actually arrived at that decision at that time. I think it came later, but I was moving towards that decision. Mm-hmm. I was an unhappy person. I was a very unhappy soul. And I didn't know that I was repairing yet. I mean, I was just living a life.
Because I didn't mean to interrupt you, but there is, for example, therapy known as new decision therapy, mm-hmm. which basically says that a person will develop a very bad illness, life-threatening illness, based on the decision that they are unhappy with their lives and do not want to live anymore.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, once that happens, I guess it can be changed too. And you are obviously an example of a person who took the time to make a new decision, which was basically, okay, all right, that's in the past. Now let's get on with something new.
Exactly. I do believe that the walk in some way was a type of penance for me, though. It was a journey. It was definitely a pilgrimage. I learned an incredible lesson out there.
All right, let's talk about the walk, because after all, the book is about the walk.
Okay, we began April 30th, and it was incredible. I had prepared and prepared and prepared. Nothing prepared me for the moment we put on those packs. The first time we put on those packs, we immediately took them back off and began unloading. We were unpacking. It was so heavy.
You started out with too much.
Yes.
A few lamps here and there.
We put the packs back on with only the most meager of supplies, and we began, and still my knees were shaking. I looked back once, and I told myself the only way I'm going to get through this is by one step at a time. Mm-hmm. And so we just started taking lots of little steps.
Now, you made an entire itinerary, I guess. You must have started, or did you?
Well,
that's a good question. Did you have an itinerary?
Not really. I looked at maps and I kind of plotted a course, but I had to be flexible enough because I didn't know what was out there. Mm-hmm. So whatever we came upon.
Because there are places you can't walk. I mean, you can't walk on a freeway, for example.
We took mostly back roads. We took back roads and we did cross country quite a bit. That's what I preferred, but we couldn't cross country until we got out farther west.
Now,
Illinois,
of course,
is too fenced.
A lot of people, especially women, are going to ask this question. Mm-hmm. My goodness, weren't you afraid? Weren't you? Didn't you feel it was dangerous to be out there by yourselves?
After growing up in Chicago? No.
I don't know.
No, out there, it's funny. Farm people pretty much leave you alone. And there weren't many people around. We just kind of kept to ourselves. We looked like some kids out on a Boy Scout adventure,
okay,
or something.
Okay, let's just, because there are a lot of people from different parts of the country that don't have the perspective here. You've got Illinois, mm-hmm, all right, and then you went through what?
Iowa.
You went through Iowa.
Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming.
All right, now that's... Driving across Nebraska was bad enough.
Actually, Nebraska was gorgeous.
Even walking across.
Well, we went up along the Missouri River and the Niobrara River. It was beautiful. Iowa was the interesting. Okay.
Folks, listen, if you're from Iowa or Nebraska, I didn't mean anything. It's just that I remember seeing 9 hours or 12 hours of cornfields, whatever it was. Maybe it was more. Maybe it was 20 hours. I'm not sure if I remember. I was glad to get out of... Actually, now just for the sake of saying this, though, as you approach Colorado, at least coming through Nebraska, going south anyway, I noticed that it does change.
Well, I personally, as a walker, I preferred it flat.
Well, I was going to say...
The hills are prettier, but I prefer it flat.
Now, did you go through Cody? Is that how you went?
Yes. Yes, we did. Well, Cody's the only entrance.
Right. Well, that direction,
yeah.
Right. Didn't walk up through Thermopolis or anything like that, did you?
No. We went through
the
basin.
I drove through Thermopolis once, and I remember saying to myself, this was a nice place, but maybe if you lived on another planet someplace, perhaps like Mars. It was very much like Mars, I guess.
Well, it's interesting, though. I haven't
been to Mars. I'm just
that you know of. I found it interesting that my feet gave me the most trouble. My feet bled the entire.
Now that's
distance.
Interesting. So you really did have trouble.
Oh, it was horrible.
This was not an easy walk.
It was horrible. It was grueling. It was the most terrible thing.
How about the girls?
You didn't
wear heels.
No,
making a joke. Okay.
Now the girls were pretty good. At one point, they a couple of them got sick. A couple of them got blisters. They were okay. Their packs were quite a bit lighter. And to tell you the truth, they at the end of the day they would take off their packs and they would sing and dance and go and play while mom collapsed. I was
well. Let's talk about that. The first few days, did you think that you had definitely bitten off more than you could chew, or did you? Just
I didn't think
left?
About it.
You just left that thought alone.
Yeah, we were just taking a day at a time.
So this was a quest.
Yes. Yeah, and I found some things out there.
Okay, let's talk about it. We've got on the surface we have the walk.
Yeah,
but that's not what it was about.
No. No, it wasn't. I learned, as a person walks, you have great opportunity to go internal and to think. And I did a lot of thinking. There wasn't a lot of distractions. I was absorbing the countryside, which was wonderful. But as I moved slowly, I know that I was learning some things about myself, and I became very introspective. And as we walked, it took a long time. Maybe I'm an obstinate person, but I began evaluating what I had been and what I wanted to be. And I realized that the things that had happened to me, that people had done to me, I had allowed to create someone I wasn't proud of and to direct me in a way that I wasn't proud of. And I had, in essence, become no better than they. And I think one of my most valuable lessons from the walk was, in order to be forgiven, I had to forgive. And that was an incredible moment. And so I did. And, you know, something, it happened so fast. It seemed like it took forever, and yet when the moment, the decision came to forgive, it was so quick and it was so easy. It was painless.
But when you say forgive, are you talking about forgiving yourself or forgiving?
No, I was forgiving the people who had hurt me in the past, and I'm talking about physical. Mm-hmm. I'd been attacked and knifed up in the past, and I mean, really, some.
That's right. You did say you lived on the
hard time.
Hard time, Chicago.
So, and I forgave that. I also forgave myself too, because I realized that I had learned from it. So I felt that that was very valuable.
Tell us about some of the adventures that you came across or experienced. And most importantly, you did leave April 30th, which is rather chilly in that part of the country, isn't it?
Yes, we had snow the first couple of weeks. In fact, Mother's Day was spent shivering inside a tent while my daughters snuck out and picked flowers for me. And then later, we had blistering heat. We had 107 degrees in Wyoming. So we ran the spectrum of temperatures and just kept going. As far as adventures, we had some incredible things happen to us. In South Dakota, we had a tornado actually pick us up. We were inside the tent, and we dove inside the tent when the tornado struck, and the tornado picked us up and bounced us around for 100 yards. And we were on an Indian reservation at the time. Later, the Indian police came out and thought we were dead. And we weren't. We were just badly bruised. But that was somewhat terrifying. It was an interesting experience.
To say the least.
And in the Bighorns, we had a mountain lion stalk us. And that was very interesting. We were up in the Bighorn Mountains in a place called Bear Trap Meadows and along Bear Trap Creek. And it was very, very quiet, and I couldn't understand why there weren't any squirrels or birds or nothing was around.
So everybody knew it was happening but you, right?
And up in Bear Trap Meadows is a place where ranchers take their sheep to graze for the summer. Well, I guess it was a plane that came out, and they were spotting the sheep, and pretty soon after it left, a Jeep came bouncing up, and one of the farmers said, "Lady, I hate to tell you this, but you're being followed by a mountain lion," and he wanted us to drive down with him. I said, no, we're going to keep going. And we just kept going, and 3 days later, she crossed in front of us with her two cubs on her way down to the river. It was as though she had accepted us, and I found out later that we were really honored by her allowing us to view her, because there have been people who have lived their lives out there for 40 years and never seen a mountain lion out there. So that was the most spectacular sighting. It was absolutely incredible. Mountain lions are huge, by the way. They're fabulous creatures. And then we had a bear in our camp near Yellowstone. That was another time. One of our most difficult times, though, was when we ran out of food and ran out of water.
That would be a difficult time, yes. Yeah,
we had one stretch that was 175 miles between towns, and there was no way we could carry our supplies, not enough, and it was very difficult, and we were still 30 miles outside of town, and we were out of food and absolutely exhausted. And I remember that time distinctly, because it makes me very humble and very appreciative. We were eating cactus and immature sunflower seeds to survive, and it was very difficult.
Now, that's, 30 miles outside of town when you're walking.
That's far.
Is that's just not far. And where was this again?
We were heading into Lynch, Wyoming.
So this is practically desert, really.
Kind of.
I mean, it's not like...
No, it's not like going to the corner Burger King or something.
The 7-Eleven. The 7-Eleven was not around the corner.
No. What was interesting, too, though, this was a Friday.
Now, you have three... What you have three girls.
Three wonderful
What are their names?
Girls. Dina, Diane, and Dory.
Okay, so the D's.
Yes, yes, yes. But what was interesting is that stores out there close on Sunday. This was Friday. If we did, and they only stay open for a couple of hours on Saturday. If we didn't make it by the next day, we would go hungry until Monday. So we had to push, and we pushed really hard. And we got to town 30 minutes before the store closed on Saturday. And we were so, peanut butter never tasted so good. Hmm.
Now, how many miles did you feel you were averaging after a while? You must have come up with a basic.
Yeah, we averaged between 10 and 15 miles a day. On the tough days when we absolutely had to get food, we would push 25 miles. Those were tough days with a pack that was hideous.
Now, you gave the date again. When did you do this?
April 30th, and we arrived.
No, the year.
Oh, I'm sorry, 1981.
So this happened in 1981.
Yes.
All right, so we're talking 11 years ago.
Yes.
And your daughters are now how old?
Dina is 23, Diane is 22, and Dory is 19.
So this is quite a story that they have to tell, too.
Yes. They don't talk about it a great deal. They let me do it.
Okay, but I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, are they happy they did this walk?
Oh, yes. Of course, Dory became a star. That was something she's very happy about. I don't know that they look at it as being happy or not. I think what was really important is they know what they're capable of. All three of them have a place of security. They know what they can do when they're pushed.
So this is an important point here.
Oh, God, yes.
We're going to have to take a break in a moment, but I think that for those of you who are listening, the importance of this walk, and we're going to talk more about the walk and how it changed your life, was that very essence. Namely, that you were out there, you lived with nature as opposed mm-hmm. to against nature.
That's right.
And it gave you the feeling that everything is all right.
Absolutely. You don't survive nature. You endure or you live with. You're right. You become one with and you just move with it.
Now, life for you, and as a segue because we're going to take a break for a moment, but life has changed a lot and yet not that much. You're still successful, mm-hmm. but you have a different direction.
Yes.
How about a couple more adventures and then let's talk about how this has changed your life. A
couple more adventures. There was a time that we made a dangerous mistake of walking on railroad tracks to cut off some distance. And
Is this going to be the bridge?
Oh, this was absolutely terrifying because, first of all, Dory was very little. And at one point, she had to get down and scoot across the tracks because we were over water.
So you were on a trestle.
Yes.
Okay.
People, if you go hiking, don't ever walk on railroad tracks.
So we know that you made it because
Yes, we made it.
And the train never came by.
The bear, now that was terrifying. We were near Yellowstone. We were only about 6 miles out, and we had heard 2 days before that a man had been mauled to death by a bear just 2 miles north of us. And
now you were carrying no weapons.
Oh, yes, I was.
Oh, you
I
were
I didn't
carrying...
go out there without a weapon.
All right, folks. Now we got this.
I was carrying...
See, this is somebody from Chicago, right? We knew it. In the background, this whole beautiful story. You had a 357 Magnum, right?
44.
A 44. Well, folks.
Magnum.
There you have it. Well, that blows the whole thing, right?
What was interesting, I never had to use it.
All right. So much for living on a divine process. Okay.
Well, not at that time.
Okay. Well, we can accept it.
All okay. Right. And I was laying outside in the... It was pitch black. And all I could hear was this crashing in the woods. And my dog was going crazy. And the river was flowing swiftly. I mean, it was rushing past, so I couldn't hear real well. The girls were in the tent. And I'm laying out there praying, oh, God, please don't. And it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. Could not see anything, just prayed and prayed. My body hurt so bad from being tense. Hmm. So then I fell asleep. I woke up to find that my dog, my loyal dog who had never ever left my side, was gone. And my first reaction was I was upset, I was worried, and then I got angry at my dog, shame on me, I got angry, and I went looking for her. And there were some other people in downstream, and they said, "Lady, do you have a black dog?" And I said, "Yes, have you seen her?" They said, "Yes, that dog chased the bear down the river." And that was, that Sadie chased everything away. She protected us. She actually went after the bear.
What kind of a dog was this? Here comes another shock. I'm
ready. No, she's a French sheepdog. Okay. A French sheepdog. She was.
I mean, this is not like a little terrier.
No. She's a good-sized dog. A mid-sized dog.
What did this? Well, of course, we don't know what the dog thought about this walk.
Well, she was hurting pretty bad. Her paws were blistered and sore. I really felt guilty about having her with. She was all matted by the time we got there, and she was just loyal. She never left my side. It's a very, very special animal.
All right. How did this thing change your life?
Oh, my God. I don't believe that we really, truly know ourselves until we're tested. I know what I can do. It has given me a place of security that no one and nothing can ever alter. I just know me. I've been through the worst of times, and I came through. Oh, in my own business today, I own my own business, and I'm a professional speaker, and I do training programs for people in personal development. And I've been building my own business. And when times get tough, I just reflect back on the walk. Nothing could be that hard.
So the point here is that you actually can say to yourself, "I made it from Chicago to Wyoming. There is nothing that anyone can do to me in the business world."
That's right.
Right.
I'm absolutely secure.
You probably feel invincible.
I do. I do. I also know what I can endure, but I also know the power of the mind. And I have a belief that if the mind can do that, what else can the mind do? There is no hierarchy. So I believe that the mind, through thought, through our own energy, we can create whatever we desire. And we were talking earlier about being in the flow. Once you get into that flow and you are doing what you are supposed to be doing, along with your thought, you are invincible. You can do anything. It's absolutely incredible. It's such a powerful feeling. It's almost intimidating to most people, but that's okay. On the walk, I also learned something about really self-examination and evaluation. I talked about forgiveness. Well, I tied that to other things. In order to be loved, you must love. But in order to receive, you must be a willing receiver. It's not just giving. In order to give, you must be a giver. I mean, everything ties in. I have a saying, to be an angel, you must be an angel. What is that angel? What does that mean to you? Evaluate it and become that person. You can be that identity, anything you want to be.
So it's an important thing that you said, namely that you need to be able to receive.
Yes.
A lot of people give easily.
Yes.
Giving is very easy.
Sure.
Intent is the problem. Why do you give? We're talking about unconditional giving.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you can receive... you can give unconditionally. A lot of people cannot receive, and that's a key.
Then it's not unconditional.
To understand that they do not give unconditionally.
That's right. That's right. Think of this. I put this in real perspective through a friend of mine. I discussed this with him, and he gave it back to me, and he said, "Why would you deny someone else the joy of giving by being a bad receiver? And don't you value yourself enough to be an open and willing receiver?" And I think that ties into abundance. I mean, how can you ever have any abundance in your life if you don't receive? You shut down. Your energy absolutely shuts down.
Abundance is a wonderful term.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stay on that for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Here you were with backpacks, really certainly by 1992 perspectives, homeless.
Oh,
right.
I guess.
No, I'm just saying by just from the vantage points that we have today. And yet I get the feeling you felt abundant.
Oh, sure. I lived off of the land.
I'm just saying.
Yes.
So I'm just saying.
I felt abundant.
You know, when people in our society look at the homeless situation, they look at it from that unconditional giving, the inability to be unconditional in their giving.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm saying that there have always been people who chose to walk around and be part of the land.
Sure.
And yet we have this idea now called homeless. You know, this is a problem. People, everyone should have a $200,000 home. It's their inalienable right to live under a sheik roof. I mean, this is not necessarily true, isn't it? Your inalienable right to do whatever you want to do.
That's right. That's right. There were people who came out and told us that, told me that I couldn't take my children out there.
Well, I would imagine, as a matter of fact, I'm going to go so far as to say that probably today it's illegal.
Oh, God, that's such a shame.
Right? Would you agree with me?
Somebody's probably come up with some kind of law.
It's probably illegal to do what you did.
Well, then I'm glad I went when I did.
I'm saying that
from
hindsight perspective. I mean, people are so today into this entire value.
Protectionism.
Protectionism, value system.
It's a new term I think we're going to learn a lot of. And I think protectionism is so dangerous because it takes away a person's trust.
Well, it takes away your rights.
Rights and trust, right. Yeah. The ability to trust your environment, to trust in yourself. How dangerous.
So we have a very interesting point here. Mm-hmm. We have people who talk about living in conjunction with nature.
Yes.
Treating the planet
gently.
As though the planet were really a living entity, opposed to thinking of it as a lump of mud, to be raped and plundered as you wish for money and power.
Yes.
You experienced that.
Yes. I love this earth, this planet. It supported me. It took care of me. It beat me up a little bit, but it supported me too. And that I just rolled with it. It's just there. It's what we are. We're just a part of it. I don't see any separation. So I think we have to care for each other, and that's part of it.
Well, the oxygen comes from the earth.
Yes.
It doesn't come from outside of the earth. I think people forget a few things here.
It's symbiotic. We're one. We are absolutely dependent on, sort of, on this planet, and yet we don't take care of it as well as we should.
Well, I think when I hear people talk about environmental issues from the economy side, the economic side, why it's economically unfeasible to live in conjunction with nature, why we should cut down the rainforests. What everyone is forgetting is that the earth will live very well without us.
Yes, but we won't live very well without the earth. Good point.
These same people that are talking about why it's economically unfeasible, why we're losing jobs, are forgetting about the fact that what good is a job if you're not alive?
It's lethal arrogance. They'll surely die.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, what was interesting is we ran the gamut of the weather when we arrived. By the way, we arrived on my 30th birthday, the one I wasn't supposed to see.
So you walked there and you got there on your 30th birthday. Did you?
Yes,
push
it
a
was
bit?
A plan. Yes, I did plan it because I wanted to thumb my nose back at Chicago.
Did you send a copy to the interns?
You know what's interesting? By the time I got there, it didn't matter.
Okay.
It didn't matter.
That's
anymore.
Good.
Didn't matter.
That's a lesson too, isn't it?
Yeah. It just didn't matter anymore. It was my lesson. Thank God they said what they did, because without it, I might not have achieved what I did. And there were no trumpets. There wasn't any fanfare. We just arrived. And I think that's how you do arrive anywhere at points in your life.
So was was Cody your arrival point?
No. We went into Yellowstone.
How far in did you go?
Yellowstone is about 60 miles mm-hmm. west of Cody. So we went, we arrived at the gate and then...
Now there's a lot of mountain climbing now that we're talking about.
Yes, it was tough. It was extremely tough. I wanted to mention Jim Creek. We were 54 miles, around 50 miles outside of Yellowstone, outside of Yellowstone Park. And I was absolutely exhausted. We had picked up some supplies, but the supplies had dwindled again, and we were down to a cup of rice, little shavings of carrot, and a piece of onion, and that's all we had to eat. So we decided to take a little bit of time off to rest, and we went up into the mountains to a place called Jim Creek, and we saw a lynx there, a bobcat, that most people would call it a bobcat. And it was beautiful, but I was so exhausted I couldn't move. Coming down out of Jim Creek, that probably had to be a very important point for me. Because as we came down out of Jim Creek, we were coming down the trail and I slipped on gravel. My pack weighed about 60 some pounds at that point. And as I came down on my knees carrying my pack. I thought I broke my knees and I was in excruciating pain and I'm crying and I'm screaming and my daughters are going, Mom, what's wrong? Oh, help, you know.
Right, and you've gone this far and this is what's
happened. Well,
happened,
what
right?
happened was I don't think I had really made an important decision until that point, and I got really angry. Up until that point, I can't really say that I believed in a God or a higher power. I had given up all belief in that, even though I'd been a child theologian. I gave up all of that when some things happened to me. But at that point, I started yelling at the sky, of all things, and I was shaking my fist at the sky saying, I don't care what more you do to me. I'm going to make it, mm-hmm. even if I have to crawl there on my hands and knees. Well, I stopped crying. My daughters helped me up. And all of a sudden, a hawk came out, a red-tailed hawk came out, and about 25 feet over my head, circled me 5 times and dropped a clump of feathers at my feet.
Very shaman experience.
Yeah, no, fooling. That was, I was impressed. I was in awe. I still have those feathers. And I picked them up and I suddenly knew that I'd made the right decision, as though I was going to keep going. Till that time, I had not decided to live. And I realize that now. I decided to live and to go on and make my life.
This was almost going to, I guess, was your last. Your last hurrah, your adventure, and then you were going to stop or something, or you didn't know what you were going to do. But now you decided that what you were going to do was you were going to live.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I was going to live, and I was going to make that living count for something.
Two things. We were talking mm-hmm. about abundance. Mm-hmm. You created a day which was in April of 1992. That was the first time, April 25th.
April 26th.
I'm sorry, April 26th, mm-hmm. Which you termed World Abundance Day.
Yes.
Why don't you reflect on that and tell our listeners a little bit about why you created it and what it is about?
Okay. Well, I was sitting and talking to a friend on the phone one day, and I was really fed up with the way the economy was being expressed through the media. I am a personal development consultant. I help people learn sales training and develop themselves in better ways. And all I'm hearing about are excuses of why they can't. Oh, the economy. Oh, this. Well, I don't like negativity. I believe that we create whatever we are by our thoughts and our actions and our words. Well, I also believe that 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the media kept telling us we're going into a recession. We're going into a recession. Well, we did. People began to tighten up. They began to think recession. Sure enough, we went into recession. I said, this has to stop. What can we do? Well, in 1987, I was involved in the Harmonic Convergence, days of coming together in world thoughts toward world cooperation, focusing our mental powers to world cooperation. And I reflected back at what has transpired since that time. The Berlin Wall came down. USSR is no more. There, we actually had headlines of peace breaking out all over. And I thought to myself, well, if we could do that, and I'll claim it, I'm willing to claim it. If we were able to do that, what else can we do? So I said, somebody should get together and do some kind of a World Abundance Day. And I looked over my shoulder and there wasn't anyone else around. So I did it. And what I did was I contacted friends and I made up flyers and I just started talking to people about focusing our mind on abundance rather than lack. Because I haven't met one person who would give up what they have now to go back to the Depression or go back to the Dark Ages or go back to any time. If we look around, we are living in excess. We are living in abundance. We aren't recognizing what we have. And we want to take away a few things that we have and we start to cry about it. I want to focus our minds on what we do have. I also believe that enough thought, enough minds linked as one in one thought creates what I've learned to be the 100th monkey principle. I don't know if others there are aware of the 100th monkey principle, but it's when enough minds come together, it happens. there is a synergy, there is an energy that takes place, and it happens. Well, I said, we can do this for abundance. So I brought people together. We met on North Avenue Beach in Chicago. And I also contacted individuals in other parts of the world. We had people in South America, in Russia, out here in California, Vancouver, Toronto, all over the place, who got groups together and focused on world abundance. We can do it. We can do anything.
Now, so, that's you're going to do this yearly?
I think so. I think it was wonderful. And I like the date. It was very close to the 30th. Seems to be kind of a send-off point. And
right, after your last send-off. Maybe you should change it to the 30th.
Yeah. And
maybe that's just a good day for you.
Yeah. And we got together and we sang, but we most of all, we induced the attitude and the feeling of abundance. If you maintain a feeling of abundance, how can you ever recognize lack? No matter what you have, it will be abundant. And I also have this belief of falling in love with life. If we, every moment of every day, if when we get up in the morning, we feel as though we are falling deeply and passionately in love with our lives. What a way to live. How exciting.
You know, when you talk about abundance, I remember something that I heard. You know, we talked about Tony Robbins.
Yes.
And incidentally, those of you listening, you have a franchise.
Yes, I own a franchise in Chicago for Tony Robbins.
He talks about abundance in a very interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it, and I think people should hear it, and you probably know it better than I do. But just, I remember from one of the Personal Power tapes where he said, the highways here in America, those highways are there, that we own them.
Mm-hmm.
The those buildings, the library, all of those books. And he goes on and on saying, look at the abundance, the salt on your table. You didn't have to carry that out of a salt mine on your back. Certainly we pay for it, but because we all share the expense, all of us get to have all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we forget. We forget why we have such abundance. We forget that we have it.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to it. Yeah. I wonder if you can add to that.
Well, it's what you focus on. It's the things that we don't need any longer, we tend to delete from our consciousness. We tend to ignore what we do have, and we're always looking for more. And God bless it. That's part of our human nature. However, if we begin to focus on what we don't have or perceive that we don't have, it's very dangerous because you go into a spiraling down cycle in what you don't have. You begin to focus on all that you don't have. If you focus on what you do have, you open up the floodgates of receivership so that you can receive more. But it's a recognition of abundance. If you just feel abundant, there's no way that you will feel as though you're missing something. You're just happy where you are. And isn't that really what it's about?
Mm-hmm. So the idea here is that you can either contract or expand depending on what direction you think.
That's right. Who was it? Viktor Frankl said in A Man's Search for Meaning, there's only one thing that we really have the ability to do, and that is we have the ability to choose our attitude in whatever situation. Mm-hmm. Well, I choose to be happy. And it doesn't matter what's happening to me. It's what I do with it. And that's what's really powerful. We have the power to be whatever we want in any moment in time. And that's true power.
We've got a few moments. Mm-hmm. What does the future hold? Don't know what the future holds. What are your plans?
Well, I just met with a producer last night, so I'm very excited about the movie that we're planning. That's a new adventure. The Walk. And I have opened myself up to adventures. I go through life now unlimited. And I'm ready for much more. I'm traveling a great deal. But more importantly, I have absolutely committed myself to giving back and to bringing others along with me, to teaching anything that I do know. I don't know that I know it, but if it comes through and somebody needs to hear that, that's perfection. That's wonderful. And so I work through my training classes and my training programs to bring others to whatever level they need. And I just offer the information. So that's part of it. And I've been developing training programs for corporations because I think that there is the ability to truly create change in America today through the corporate level because it affects all our lives. So there's a lot. There's a lot to do. But we all go as a team.
We've talked about the walk, which really is an entire history of change in your life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important for people to hear that once again, the day that you wake up and decide you don't like who you are and you don't like what you've done, it's not over. It can change. And you've shown that it can change. And most importantly, you left something and have returned in a different way. And there you are back in Chicago with your own business again.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Meryl.
Thank you,
Bruce. I appreciate you taking the time to come out here, first, especially to Southern California. I want to thank all of you for tuning in, Timeless Voyager Radio. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.
Oh,